Hello, this is Judge Jim Gray from the Superior Court in Orange County, California. I'm the author of the book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, The Judicial Indictment on the War on Drugs. And you are listening right now to the Drug Truth Network with Dean Becker.
The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies. Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. Here in just a moment, we'll bring in our guest, Judge James P. Gray, the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. We also have several reports for you from our reporters, many of whom are now back in action. I've got to start this show with the thought that there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, moral clarity, medical data, no reason whatsoever for this drug war to continue. And I learned much of that from our guest, Judge James P. Gray, and his bold and insightful book. He gave me the courage and the insight to begin this Drug Truth Network. Okay, we're proud to welcome once again to the Drug Truth Network, Judge James P. Gray. He's the author of Why the Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, A Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. He's also very much interested in the judicial process, the workings of government in our nation. Welcome, Judge Gray.
Dean, thank you. It's certainly nice to be with you once more.
I want to ask you, your run for the U.S. Senate last year in the state of California, it made a difference, but what have you been doing since that point in time? I know you're a very busy fellow.
Well, Dean, to be frank with you, I was disappointed with regard to our run for U.S. Senate. I wanted to be a part of the discussion, and unfortunately I really wasn't, but not only was I not, there really was no discussion. President Bush pretty much abandoned California, and so didn't spend any money here, and the Republican candidate, Bill Jones, really didn't get off the ground either, and so we just didn't have a discussion. There's so many critical issues to talk about, and it was really quite discouraging to allow this opportunity to go by without being able to speak about the medical marijuana issue, for example, and how the federal government is just such a bully in trying to persuade folks that they shouldn't take medicine that helps them in really difficult medical situations, and other things like that, too, in addition to drug policy. What I've been doing since then, to be honest with you, I'm trying to syndicate a biweekly column in various newspapers to address issues, again, not only the drug policy issue, which in many ways is the most critical issue that we can discuss, but other things as well as to why what we're doing just isn't working both federally and around the world. So it's been keeping me pretty busy. Otherwise, then, too, I can tell you I've written a musical, and it's been performed by a local high school. A local PBS station now has filmed the music from it, just in the final stages of editing, so if anybody wants to look at American Doll, which is the name of the musical, it'll be on KOCE, a PBS TV station, probably broadcast sometime around Thanksgiving. So that's kind of fun, too, and kind of a part of what I'm doing.
Well, sir, if I may ask, the musical, is it themed around the drug war?
No, it's themed around mentoring our children, letting them know, for example, that certainly life is good, but responsibility is important. Stay in school. You'll earn an awful lot more money and have a much better life if you choose to stay in school, because choosing to leave school is a choice as well. And focusing upon responsibility and things like that, but having a good time along the way. So we're having some fun with it.
The messages put forth by the government drug agency.
Whatever you're going to say, is a message is just not working, Dean, and you know that, and I think your listeners increasingly are knowing that as well. But what we're doing now with our present drug policy is literally fueling children to join gangs and be part of the action. We're increasing crime. People don't realize this, but when we finally came to our senses and repealed alcohol prohibition, homicides went down nationwide 60% in 1 year. I'm convinced the same phenomenon will occur when we finally repeal drug prohibition. People also don't realize that almost literally every dollar we put into the prosecution of nonviolent drug offenders is a dollar we take away from the prosecution of violent offenses. So violence is flourishing mostly because of the fact that it's being fueled by drug money, and we're not putting our resources where it will really help us. It goes on, you know, about the civil liberties disaster and about the exportation of all of this money that undercuts entire legitimate governments worldwide. It's just a disaster in the making.
Judge Gray, many people like myself, and I'm sure thousands of others, have read your book and found a new focus and perhaps some new courage to take actions against the mechanisms of the drug war. I think perhaps foremost among that are members of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. There is a new wave on the horizon, is there not?
Well, I believe so. Again, I'm an optimist. I think that our people are beginning to understand the truth, which is, okay, yes, these are complex, gnarling issues, but it's okay to discuss drug policy. Dean, as you know, if we just get that fact across to our people and allow ourselves the ability to discuss this issue without feeling that we're caving in to allowing our children to take drugs, etc., which is certainly not true, we can just allow an open, full, and honest discussion. We will change away from our nation's drug policy because it's abundantly clear that not only it's not working, it's affirmatively harming us and particularly our children. When I knew, prognosticated, anticipated the fall of the Berlin Wall within 6 months of when it happened. But it certainly, when it came down with a rush. And I'm fully convinced that the same phenomenon will occur when we finally start to change and repeal drug prohibition. It's going to come down with a rush. And then virtually everybody will link arm in arm after a year or two and think, my goodness, how could we have possibly supported such a failed system for so long? So it's going to happen, hopefully with good discussions like you and your show. It'll happen a little sooner than later.
Well, I know following on the success of cities like Vancouver with their four pillars approach, that certain cities here in the U.S., most notably Seattle, Washington, and now Hartford, Connecticut, are trying to do just that, to join forces to change the way we go about this thing.
Well, Dean, the answer is to look at our concept of federalism. I mean, our country was founded upon the concept of federalism. Now we have 50 places of democracy, you know, and we should allow each state to decide how best to serve its people. And then, you know, if Seattle or Washington comes up with something that doesn't work, but Iowa comes up with something that does, guess what's going to happen? You know, Iowa maybe tinker around the edges and fine-tune their system, but pretty much leave it alone. Washington's going to look around and say, boy, you know, we tried, but what we're doing isn't working. But wait a minute, look what's going on in Iowa. Let's edge over to see what they're doing. And in this way, it's clear that the federal government does not have the answers. So allow each state to try whatever would work, and pretty soon we'll come up with some real, real progress. It's worked for us in so many other ways. We must again go back to that with regard to our drug policy, too. And then good things will start to happen. If they don't, we'll change it.
Well, I know as a working Superior Court judge out there in Orange County, California, you might not be able to answer this, but what's your thoughts on the nominee for the Supreme Court?
Well, you're right. I don't think it's appropriate for me in my judicial capacity to respond to that. It's clearly a very important decision to make. We certainly want to have someone who will lead our country and our courts, but otherwise, Dean, I think I'm going to have to demur.
Well, I understand that, sir. And as just a private citizen, we've spent tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars, supposedly, to prepare us for emergencies. What's your thoughts about what happened in New Orleans and in the Gulf Coast?
Well, I'm horrified, of course. This was a very large catastrophe. In fact, my son is there right now in a security position. I'm deeply concerned. Pointing fingers isn't all that helpful, but good heavens, man, this town is below sea level or below the water level, so you would think that somebody could have figured out, my goodness, it's possible that if something were to happen, that these levees could break. Well, they have broken, and we need to come to the rescue of our own people. It's been really gratifying, and the first time in my remembrance that other countries now have come to support the United States in need, and I really appreciate that, and I think we all do. But, you know, way back in my mind, recesses as well, I think, you know, we are a strong country. We really should have been able to protect ourselves better than we did. But we should learn from our past mistakes, get away from finger-pointing, and really get to the business at hand, which is to help people and get on with the reparations.
I wanted to ask you, I know that over time, perhaps your attitude, your stance towards marijuana has changed a bit. Are you not involved now with perhaps some of the better ideas in the state of California?
Well, I've supported Proposition 215 from its inception and before it was on the ballot. That means our medical marijuana program. I'm deeply disturbed about the Raich versus Gonzalez case, it used to be Raich versus Ashcroft, that, you know, the United States Supreme Court ended up saying that Angel Raich was growing her own marijuana for her own needs in her own yard with the recommendation in writing from her medical doctor. And I've met Ms. Raich, and she has severe terminal medical problems. And if she even thinks marijuana would help her with regard to those serious seizures and cancers and the rest, let her have them, for heaven's sake, and let a doctor do her professional work. And if the United States government can label that as being an interstate commerce, literally the rocks in your own backyard could also be labeled as being an interstate commerce in some fanciful way. So I was very discouraged about that. Fortunately, the people around the nation have taken a look at it. They've seen what's going on and beginning to understand that what we're doing is heartless, it's a crime against our people, and it's a bullying that simply should not occur. So I'm involved with that. I'm involved with Proposition 36 here in California, which is taking nonviolent drug users out of the criminal justice system, getting them into treatment where they belong. But the problem is, Dean, a lot of people that use these various drugs, and I don't, as you know, I've never used any form of illicit drug, but I do come home. In fact, I'm about to right now. It's 7:15 in the evening. I come home pretty much after work and take a mind-altering, sometimes addicting drug, namely have a glass of wine with dinner, and pretty much do it every day. Well, I don't think I need alcohol treatment, to be honest with you. I'm very careful about driving ever after I've been drinking, etc., and I'm able to function just fine. Well, other people take other drugs, like marijuana, and I don't think they need treatment either, but their only way, at least in California, of getting out of the criminal justice system is to go through drug treatment, for example, for marijuana or even other drugs, when they really don't need it. So we need to separate what you put in from your into your body. That's your decision, that's a medical decision, your family decision, and your doctor. And get those people away from the criminal justice system, and then reserve the criminal justice system with its scarce resources to address people's conduct. You know, if you or any of your listeners or I drive a motor vehicle impaired by any of these drugs, and you can say methamphetamines or marijuana or alcohol or any of the rest, that's a crime, as well it should be, because now we are putting other people's safety at risk. But when it comes down to it, like I've said before, it makes as much sense to me to put this gifted actor Robert Downey Jr. in jail for his cocaine problem, and he certainly appears to have one, as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem. You know, those are medical issues, and the issue is the same. Get the criminal justice system out of those issues completely and hold people accountable for their actions. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm still involved. Last month, I was speaking at the Canadian Bar Association in Vancouver. People talked about my book there, too. I was on the radio and a few newspaper articles and the rest. I'm doing what I can, consistent with getting my cases tried here, but it's just a question of time. And we'll get there eventually, and again, I applaud your efforts. You're doing a fine job, my friend, and I'm real proud of you.
Well, Judge Gray, I thank you, and it has been in large part due to your influence, your book, and your willingness to speak the truth that helped me to follow suit.
Well, thank you. You flatter me. I'm trying to get my book, which is entitled Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About the Indictment of the War on Drugs. I'm trying to use this as a vehicle for the open and honest discussion. I quote 40 judges in the book, and it was printed in 2001, so there have been a lot more since then, but 40 judges from around the country, certainly a couple there in Texas, who were weighing in their thoughts on this as well. It's time for all of us to address this and we can do better. We couldn't possibly do worse if we tried, so we can only go forward from here. So once again, thank you. I look forward to seeing you again soon, and anytime you have some dead air space, so give me a call. I'd be happy to fill it.
Well, I thank you for that, Judge Gray.
Absolutely. Take care. Good luck to us all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
As radical and unpolished as I am in regards to this drug war, I feel great pride in knowing that Judge Gray, as polished and conservative as he is, sees eye to eye with me on the subject of drug war. It's time to identify this jurisdiction by its drug laws. This nation has laws against the sales of marijuana seeds, yet they've never incarcerated anyone for having done so. But they are acting in collusion with the United States Drug Enforcement Administration to send Mr. Mark Emery to prison for life, perhaps soon to be the 51st of the United States, Canada.
This week in drug war history, September 16th, 2003. Seattle voters approve Initiative 75, which instructs local police and prosecutors to make adult marijuana possession their lowest priority. September 17, 1998. 93 members of Congress vote yes in the first vote on medical marijuana to take place on the floor of the House. September 17, 2002. Santa Cruz, California officials allow a medical marijuana giveaway at City Hall to protest federal raids. September 20, 1999. The public is finally informed of the results of Washington, D.C.'s Initiative 59, the Legalization of Marijuana for Medical Treatment Initiative of 1998, after Judge Richard Roberts allows the release of the tally previously suppressed by Congress. Voters had supported medical marijuana by 69-21%. September 21, 1969. In an attempt to reduce marijuana smuggling from Mexico, the Customs Department, under Commissioner Miles Ambrose, launches Operation Intercept, subjecting every vehicle crossing the Mexican border to a 3-minute inspection and to many observers marking the beginning of the modern war on drugs. The operation lasts 2 weeks and wreaks economic havoc on both sides of the border, but fails to seriously impact the flow of marijuana into the U.S. This is Steve Nolan for the Drug Truth Network.
I find it quite exciting to know that one of our Drug Truth Network reporters, Mr. Cliff Thornton, is able to hear Century of Lies in his hometown of Hartford, Connecticut, and he gets it from WXOJ in Northampton. And I thank you folks for being there for us.
The economic position of the residents of New Orleans is reflective of the economic position of the majority of black communities in this country. Yes, I will agree that we have more black millionaires today than we had in the past, but most are in the arena of professional sports and entertainment. The economic divide in this country has played and will continue to play a major role in the massive incarceration of black men. Until the black community collectively takes a stand and say enough is enough. Today, most of our black leaders should receive a failing grade for their commitment to the community. The black leaders, be they religious, political, professional, should be ashamed of themselves for buying into the status quo and forgetting about from which they came. For many years now, black leaders have been more concerned with their personal bank accounts, the cars they drive, and the number of custom-made Brooks Brothers suits in their closets than the holistic condition of the black community. As a community, we should openly hold those so-called black leaders accountable for what they have and have not done, and if necessary, remove them from power. We need to demand an end to the standardized tests of third graders that many of these reports are focused in on and become factors to determine the number of prison beds a state may need in the future. The unfortunate events caused by Hurricane Katrina may serve as a springboard for black people to engage in strategic and deliberate alliances to hold the government accountable for what they have and have not done for us as a people since we were freed 140 years ago. We must understand we need to end America's war on drugs. And because of the war on drugs, we have become a slave system for the government of this country. We do not need more social programs, public assistance that is designed to keep you us in debt, dependent upon a broke system and destroys an already fragmented family structure. We do not need any more feel-good speeches and sermons about spirituality that leave out the very teachings of survival in light of a natural or man-made disaster. We do not need any more extravagant award ceremonies or banquets for black leaders who are doing nothing for the madness. What we do need is to demand an end to the so-called war on drugs and reparations for those communities that have been hardest hit. This is Cliff Thornton for Efficacy and Drug Truth Network.
Like Paul Revere, former police officer Howard Wooldridge is riding his horse Misty back across America, proclaiming that we must legalize all drugs.
Okay, we're speaking with a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Howard Wooldridge. Where are you today, sir?
Syracuse, New York, the Empire State, 320 miles from New York City.
Well, that's wonderful. Howard, tell us about the latest events. What's been going on the road there?
Well, I finally had a couple of bad encounters with law enforcement in Ohio near Cleveland. Two separate situations. They thought I was more of a homicide suspect than a man riding a horse. But we got through it okay, and also had dozens of real positive encounters like today. A deputy sheriff stopped by, and when she was in the eighth grade, she had written a paper on why we should legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana. So, of course, she was all over the issue.
Well, Howard, tell us a bit about that encounter with law enforcement. Was there an escaped murderer on a horse?
No, Dean, it was just a guy that didn't like my T-shirt. So he stopped me and said there's a local ordinance that you can't have livestock inside the city of Lakewood. And I said, Misty's not livestock. She's a horse. This is transportation. I got the same rights as a bicycle. He said, you're wrong, and I'm gonna have to give you a ticket. So 15 minutes later, he says, well, we can't find the ordinance. You're free to go.
Well, typical enough, I guess.
After he took my Social Security number and my cell phone number and my address, and, you know, everything but my shoe size.
Well, Howard, tell us about some of those positive encounters. You're wearing a shirt that says, cops say legalize drugs, ask me why. What do you tell them?
You know, when I was in Cleveland, I was stopped by several police officers and detectives there in the city. They said, you know, that makes so much sense. We've been saying that for years, you know, back at the donut shop, but you can't say it in public. And they were all over it. I had other officers, all over the place. Deputy Sheriff the other day here in New York said, yeah, and he's thinking about being a speaker for LEAP. So, yeah, many of our colleagues, especially the retired ones, are believing in it, and that's one of my purposes here is to try to get them to step up and become a speaker for the Rotaries and Kiwanis Clubs.
Well, Howard, I see it as in order for a working policeman to stand up for drug reform, he's got to kind of denigrate the reputations of many who've come before him. It is a difficult task, is it not?
It is very difficult, and that's why LEAP has stealth membership for active duty police officers. Well, like I told the deputy this morning, who's, you know, maybe 25, I said, if you know some retired deputies or retired police officers, you know, contact them and let them know that we exist, and we're looking for people to step up, and heck, we give them 35 cents a mile. What more could you ask? Well, this is Howard and Misty signing off from Syracuse, New York, the Empire State. Keep up the good work, and we will too.
I was real proud this past week. I gave a speech to the American Constitution Society at the University of Houston Law School. You can hear that speech in an interview I conducted with Mr. Mark Emery out of Canada if you'll go to our website, drugtruth.net, and listen to this week's Cultural Baggage Radio Show.
Hello, Drug Truth Network listeners. This is Nora Callahan with the November Coalition. Next week, I'll be traveling to Washington, D.C. I've been invited by the prisoner chapter of the NAACP, and we'll be having a panel presentation that we're giving to the Black Caucus, and it's a coalition of different leaders. There'll be Kenny Lynn with FedCure, an organization that works on projects around federal prison reform, Roberta Franklin, of the Journey for Justice March last August and who represents family and friends of incarcerated persons out of Alabama. Yours truly, Nora Callahan with the November Coalition. Gary Jones, a retired lieutenant with the Bureau of Prisons, who is now an advocate for sentencing policy reform, immediate release of nonviolent drug prisoners. John Flahive of We Believe Group, the George Martiano case and advocacy group. So it's a collection of leaders from the Journey for Justice, and we're going to be addressing the Black Caucus and different supporters to carve out new strategies for the future. So we're very excited about that, and we're told that it will air on C-SPAN, and so people should be could be watching C-SPAN on the 23rd of September. A story that hasn't been widely publicized was in the areas where Katrina was hard hit, from Mississippi into New Orleans. There were many prisons, and they were not able to evacuate everyone, just like in the hospitals, and people were left behind to die. But in New Orleans, where people were able to die with some dignity, given morphines, because doctors now are coming forward to say that they had to kill patients, these prisoners just drowned and suffered. And hundreds of prisoners, and many of them juveniles, showed up in other facilities dehydrated, half-starved to death, and near death. And so it was prisoners who are charges of the public. So we think that the overcrowding of our American prisons led to this tragedy, because they did cite that as a reason why they weren't able to evacuate. They just had simply too many to get them out in an orderly way. So now we wonder if there were any disaster. And it's just a system that's totally near collapse, and people really need to take a hard look at it and demand that changes are made. It was absolutely a terrible thing that happened down there, but in large part, it wasn't the hurricane, but policies. So we've gone to call it policy Katrina. A lot of what happened because of inept bureaucracies. So that all needs to be reexamined. Thank you, Drug Truth Network. This is Nora Callahan with the November Coalition. You can visit us on the Internet, on the World Wide Web, at november.org.
Among the victims of Hurricane Katrina were some 1,300 patients in methadone maintenance programs. These people and others who had been in alcohol and drug treatment in New Orleans are now flooding treatment programs in other parts of Louisiana and in neighboring states. Sadly, Louisiana had a long history of underfunding drug treatment. According to a report in the Chicago Tribune, Louisiana had as many as 1,800 people on waiting lists on any given day. In a state of 4 million people, Louisiana had only 32 detox beds, of which 20 were lost to Katrina. And these are only the people whose problems with alcohol and other drugs had driven them to seek treatment. Now, on top of problems with drug use, they've all endured horrendous trauma. The federal government is releasing hundreds of thousands of dollars to states throughout the region to help deal with the problem, yet it's not going to be enough. Treatment does work. The system for dealing with drug users and alcoholics is the problem. And it was broken well before Katrina arrived. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
In closing, I remind you once again that there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, medical data, moral clarity, religious underpinnings, in fact, no reason whatsoever for this drug war to continue. The drug lords truthfully run both sides of this equation. We've been duped. Please do your part to help end this madness. Prohibido istac evilesco. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.